Welcome back to the Movie Draft House. I'm your host, Mark, joined by co-host Jeff.
Hey, Mark, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you enjoying the college tournament that is, or may or may not be happening at this current moment?
Are you enjoying the tournament of basketball?
Yeah, like who do you got? Who are you taking? As of right now, we know that Duke and North Carolina both have basketball teams.
That's what we do know.
So I'm going to take one of those teams that has a basketball team from North Carolina.
Okay, I'll take Virginia.
There you go. You heard it here first.
They too have a basketball team.
Because we are recording this when the tournament is definitely happening. It's March Madness, everyone. But before do that.
That's right. We got to plug some music here on the podcast. And this month, music is brought to you by the New York City band No Shows. And they bill themselves as alt instrumentalist. And the song is called Getaway. So be sure to hit the show notes to get all the links to their social media accounts. They're doing big things. Give them a like, follow, and a subscribe. We appreciate them allowing us to use their music here on our podcast. Jeff.
What up, Mark?
Before we get into it.
Okay. All right.
Did I hit the theme?
Oh, we're going to start off with that. So
before we say what we watched, did I hit the theme?
What I was going to say as I was watching this film was, you know what? It's not worth arguing. So, yes, you hit the theme.
I think
anyone would have to admit that basketball is synonymous with this film.
Yeah, okay.
It's not like watching a basketball team and all that other stuff, but it doesn't have to be. So, sure, yes, you hit the theme, Mark. Congratulations. Nice. No one is cheering. You did the bare minimum.
Anyways, what the fuck do we just watch?
Well, it is March Madness month, so we're doing all basketball movies, hence the theme that Mark has hit for once in his career on the Movie Draft House. So we watched Air from 2023, starring and directed by Ben Affleck, as well as Matt Damon, Viola Davis, Jason Bateman, and Chris Tucker. It's nominated for things.
I didn't get any Oscar nominations, okay. But this came out early in 2023, and so it missed. It did get nominated for Golden Globe, a couple Golden Globes, but it came out too early, I think, to be serious awards Oscar contenders. But so I'm a big Ben Affleck director fan. He's a very talented filmmaker. I don't care for him much as an actor, but when it comes to making movies, he's really good. And I think if you go through his filmography as a director,
chronologically,
you should. Honestly,
that is not a bad idea.
Because he has a lot of.
It'd be a short season, to be honest.
Right, but I mean, if you go through it, he has hit. I mean, hit after hit. I mean, one of his most recent films was a Best Picture winner, Argo. But
The Town's really good. I like The Town.
The Town is good.
He directed a short called I Killed My Lesbian Wife, Hung Her on a Meat Hook, and now I have three. Hold on. Now I have a three picture deal at Disney. That's the name of a short that Ben Affleck directed, and I am not joking.
That is awesome. But I mean, I haven't seen Live by Night, but that seems, according to IMDb. Well, I haven't seen Gimme Shelter either, but...
Oh, that's a music video.
Oh, is it?
It says video next to it, so I'm guessing it's a music video, and Gimme Shelter is Gimme Shelter shows the work that the UNHCR is doing to fulfill the mandate of protecting and supporting refugees around the globe in an illustrative example. So I don't think that's...
Might be a short documentary. Yeah. Of him. But, like, he is what I would consider, like, an every 5-6 year director. And when he makes a movie... He makes a good movie.
Let's run it down. All right. So his first movie is 07. 3 years yeah. later, we got The Town. It's 2010. Yeah. 2012, yeah. we got Argo. 16, Live by Night. And then he had a huge gap to 2023 for Air.
Well, I think the big gap was because he had originally signed on to direct a Batman film.
Oh, that's when the whole Batman shenanigans was going yeah. down, huh? Yeah.
And I think he got as far as like writing a screenplay for it, and then WB pivoted and kind of just like was like, fuck off, Ben Affleck.
It wasn't his fault that whole thing sucked.
No, but I think he had kind of demands. Snyder had more to do with
the crappiness of it than anything.
Sure. Ben Affleck is on, I think he's on record. I'm going to talk out my ass here for a minute.
Yes. I love it when he does this.
Like Ace Ventura. He's on record as saying that he was only going to make a certain type of Batman film. It was going to be in the kind of same vein as Zack Snyder's universe, but it was going to be ultra gritty. Like, think The Town meets Batman. That's what I would imagine.
That could be interesting. And, I could see Batman right. in the same realm as The Town could be interesting.
Sure. He was going to play Batman, and WB was, I guess, just like, no, we have to keep continuity because at the time they were trying to get this DCEU all over the place. And so by the time he was bounced from, or he just kind of just like
yeah.
threw his shit up in the air and was like, I'm out.
Just like a monkey just throwing shit up in the air.
Right.
That's what you said. I didn't say that.
I mean, yeah. But, no, I mean, so that the gap between 2016 and 2023 is for that reason. And
also the pandemic.
You know, I don't. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Even though I don't know how long Air was in development and, you know, how long he had been working on. Because he didn't, I don't think he wrote the screenplay.
No, it was Alex Convery. Convery. Contrary.
Yeah.
He's very contrary.
So, I mean, as a filmmaker, Ben Affleck is, he's one of my favorite directors, is because he's just got this knack for telling good stories in settings that you wouldn't think would provide the good stories. And so, like, Argo, that was a masterclass in storytelling. You've seen that, right?
Nope.
Oh, shit.
Where we go, what? Oh, we got to put it, yeah. Listen, you know, like, I don't have to say, movie. Hey, this movie came out in the 80s. Did you see it?
Yeah, right.
You just do the same for me, but like with 2010 and after.
Got you. Got you. So let me ask you this.
Yes.
What are your overall thoughts on Air here?
So I am what the kids call a Michael Jordan hater. A self-admitted hater. I don't like him. I don't like the Bulls back then. Now I'm fine with them.
Fuck the Bulls.
Bulls suck.
Bulls suck today.
Well, I don't know. I stopped paying attention when the Sonics no longer appeared. I'm a big Seattle Supersonics fan, and then they disappeared when they moved to Oklahoma City, and I stopped watching basketball. But I watched it long enough to really hate Michael Jordan, and it's not really any fault of his. It's more his fans, and... the fact that they jump ship when he, you know, like, oh, we're all Michael Jordan fans. They talk a bunch of shit. Yeah, here I am, a lifelong Seattle fan. And when the Bulls started sucking, I'm like, haha, they suck. Well, we're not Bulls fans anymore. We're Lakers fans. Well, then fuck you. You don't get to talk shit at that point. And so I hate Michael Jordan for these reasons. Again, not really his fault, but I do kind of cringe at Michael Jordan worship. That being said,
this movie is a lot of Michael Jordan worship.
Yes, especially near the end. The first like hour, I would say, is pretty fun. You know, like there's no major like Michael suck your dick, man. That's later in the film. Especially as you get closer to the end, it's like, oh, he's going to save us all. It's this weird thing. He's a basketball player. And they're like, he became the greatest basketball player of all time. That sort of shit's arguable to me because...
Is it?
To me, because what position did he play? He was a guard, right? And what about Shaq? What about Walt? You know, what about Wilt Chamberlain? These people that play in different positions, they have a different, you know, I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, no, Shaq
was a thing because Shaq was so damn unstoppable that they just had to foul him because they couldn't handle him anyway. So are you going to say one's better than the other? I have a hard time with that. Like in the NFL, you never see that, right? You say, Tom Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time. But you can't compare Tom Brady to Barry Sanders, right? And that's true. All I'm saying. But I'm, of course, biased and will never admit that he's the best player of all time. And that's as honest as I'm going to be about Michael Jordan, is that I'm biased against him.
Now I think it's arguable because of LeBron James, but...
is it? Like, you know, and that's the funny thing. I would say Kobe more than Michael. LeBron.
I agree. I'm a Lakers fan. We've discussed this, but and Kobe's one of my favorite players of all time. RIP. But you know, LeBron just does so much, and the longevity.
Kobe stopped. LeBron more, mostly because he seems like a reasonable human being and a nice guy.
Sure.
And he's a hell of a better
Kobe
actor.
Kobe was a straight up asshole.
He does have the worst version of Space Jam. LeBron does. And that accounts for something because that's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. All of that aside, let's set aside my dislike for the man and just look at this movie. It's labeled as a drama sports movie. I found this to be very funny, especially like in the first three quarters of the film. Really funny movie. Matt Damon's awesome and is playing off of Jason Bateman. Jason Bateman's more of a comedian style actor, I think, than say Matt Damon, but they both play off of each other really well. Of course, Chris Tucker is a huge, you know, sort of comedic acting legend. And so I found that really, because I did not want to watch this. I did not want to watch a movie about shoes. And so
shoes were in it very, very, very little.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually kind of more corporate politics, which still doesn't sound that exciting. But the funny nature of the beginning of the film really drug me along. It was really entertaining because I was laughing the whole time. The characters were fun and likable, and I'm a basketball fan, so basketball helps. And at the end of the day, I really enjoyed this story. Then I self-reflect on it. I'm like, if I take the movie as it is, I really like it. But I think about, okay, we're just watching a movie about the sales tactic to get Jordan on. It is an interesting story that they kind of go all in on Jordan. And we, as the viewer in the future, because this takes place in the 80s, we know that Michael Jordan is going to be considered the greatest of all time, and we know what's going to happen with Air Jordans and the Jordan brand shoes.
Right,
and that kind of
foreshadowing.
Yeah, that makes it a lot of fun to kind of get to. When I find history I know about, some of the most fun history to kind of relive. And so I found it to be an enjoyable film. I also really like that they chose to not show Michael Jordan's face on camera, the character that they had. I think that was smart, mostly because he's so recognizable that any actor you cast has got a huge uphill battle. And I would compare it to, even though I haven't seen the film yet, I am a wrestling fan, and the movie Iron Claw came out, and people were shitting on the guy who played Ric Flair, because Ric Flair is so well known, and no one can really do it. I mean, people can do impersonations, but no one's going to be able to, bring that to the screen in a way that people will forget that they're not looking at an actor trying to be Ric Flair. And I think that they casted Damian Delano Young as Michael Jordan, but you only see the back of his head. You hear his voice a little bit. And I think that that was really, really smart to keep us, the viewer, in the movie, to not suspend disbelief, or have to suspend disbelief by seeing someone who clearly wasn't Jordan playing Jordan.
And I also think, you know, Affleck choosing to shoot the movie the way he did, and the screenplay written to where we don't need to know. We don't need to see Michael Jordan.
Right. And it adds to the mythos. Right.
Yeah.
I think.
Right. Right. He is this the godlike character, in this film, and you know his name is synonymous with royalty and his shoe and just everything we know about him today. And so I think that was a really smart decision, like you said, to kind of cast the physical appearance of Michael Jordan aside and make the reveal of the shoe. I really enjoyed that. The first shoe that was created for this pitch to the Jordan family. And I enjoyed a lot of the decisions that Ben Affleck made as a director, because we gloss over Matt Damon, but this is probably one of his best performances that I've seen him in.
Barely in the movie, but
Matt Damon?
Oh, not Matt Damon. I thought you said Ben Affleck. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, Matt Damon's the main character. Yeah.
Right.
He's really good.
I got to say one thing. He's fantastic.
Is they kept calling him fat and like, "Hey, fat boy." He's Hollywood fat in that he's normal. He is not fat.
He's got a gut.
He's in his 40s or whatever. He's got dad bod at the worst. He's not a fat guy, but they shit on him like he's 300 pounds.
Well, I really enjoyed Chris Messina's character as David Falk, Jordan's agent.
Do you think that he was channeling Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder? I think so.
I mean, that could have been an inspiration. Because it was witty.
When he finds out that Matt Damon went to the Jordan's house, and that whole chewing him out scene's really funny and great.
I'm going to chew your ball sack.
It's right out of literally fuck your own face. Like, you could put those scenes next to each other, and he delivers the same level of energy. He is so pissed, and it's so funny.
Yeah, him and Chris Messina, he has a handful of scenes, and they're all very good. But probably the most underrated character in the movie is Jason Bateman's character, Rob Strasser, the marketing guy for Nike. It's because he's, in my opinion, he has the most depth. We actually find out, you know, layers to him as the movie goes on, and you know, we find out that is, you know, he's having trouble, like his wife's divorced him, and he's only sees his daughter like 4 days a month or whatever it was, and you know, he has this conversation with Matt Damon at the Nike headquarters over a weekend, and he spends his birthday. And I just really enjoyed Jason Bateman as an actor.
Yeah, me too.
But because he's very good. Like he's very he undersells, but it's his ability to create emotion where other actors would probably oversell the performance, where he can kind of very just small things he does, either, you know, nonverbal or with just very few words, can cause a lot of emotion. And I really enjoyed his scenes, especially with Matt Damon. It's because, like you said, they do play off of each other very well. But I enjoyed his scenes because there was a lot of depth to his character, and it's not a big part. I mean, he's in the movie a little bit more than Chris Messina is.
I think what his character does in the scene you're talking about, where you find out about his kid, is to actually kind of give some stakes to how important this is. Because Matt Damon is like, this is kind of like a all or nothing situation. Either they land Jordan and everything's great, or they don't and he loses his job. And that's not huge stakes for us as the viewer, but Jason Bateman's character elevates those stakes by his talking about his daughter and how he uses the shoes to kind of make sure he stays in her good graces. And I think that's why that scene is there. More to kind of raise the what they're risking than sure. necessarily even to make the character even have a lot of depth. Because it does feel, I feel like you could take that scene out and the movie's still pretty good. Like, I don't think that it actually adds that much to his character.
It's one of the only scenes that has emotional weight to it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the big monologue by Matt Damon in the pitch room with Jordan that has, you know, a lot of emotional charge to it. But, like, raw emotion, I think that's
Chris Messina's. That's raw emotion. Fuck you. Yeah.
I'm gonna eat your balls. That's raw emotion, baby. But no, I really enjoyed the performances in this film. At the, you know, as I'm watching it, I'm like, Viola Davis, she's great. She's great in everything she does.
That's true.
She's very understated, but very matter of fact. Carries herself, you know, as she's the matriarch of the Jordan family.
But even she has this strange reverence for her own son. Like,
correct.
When she even is sort of on Matt Damon's side, like when they said she's the one that kind of convinces him to do the pitch, right? Mama made him do it.
Right.
And then they get there and she's like, okay, he doesn't really want to be here, but he has agreed to listen. And so she's really trying. She likes Matt Damon. And the thing I like too is like when Matt Damon is essentially pitching to her for them to have a chance to pitch to Michael, he tells her, okay, here's what's going to happen in your other meetings. They're going to say this. I want you to ask this. And, you know, and of course it all plays out like he says, which I think that's probably more fiction than it is reality of what actually happened. But I still like that setup. And then you get to see it and everything. And you know that Viola Davis really appreciates that forwardness that Matt Damon brings in his character in those scenes, where it feels like they strike up a bit of a friendship.
Yeah, you can see there's a lot of mutual respect between the two of them. And, you know, and like I didn't know this about Michael Jordan's dad. Until they like showed the clipping during Damon's monologue, but I didn't realize that he was shot up. You know, he was killed in a gun.
Who was?
What you call it? His dad.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Jordan's dad was
killed.
You know, killed in a barrage of gunfire or whatever. And so like. I enjoyed the dynamic of Jordan's parents Dad was kind of, you know, carefree.
Happy to be there, it felt.
Happy to be there, yes. Yeah. That's a good term, because he was seemed to be along for the ride. Yeah. And mom was just like, hey, you know, this is what we want, and we're not going to settle, and either you give us this or you don't, and we go with somebody else. And I enjoyed that straightforwardness to Viola Davis's character. I liked that she didn't, like, there wasn't enough scenes with her in it to where we could kind of question, you know, what her motives were, or, you know, if she was actually like that. We every scene we got her in, she was the same way every single time. And so I appreciated that, is because that's a big character. She's a small part of this film, but she carries a lot of weight to it. And that's the caliber of actress she is, but also, you know, the writing of the film, where it's like, hey, we meet this character, we understand her in, you know, 30 seconds, and then she gives us the same performance throughout the film. And, you know, her character serves an actual purpose, unlike some other characters in other films where we're introduced because somebody's playing them, somebody famous and talented, but their character doesn't really serve a purpose. Hers here absolutely does.
Yeah, I agree. I think she is one of the whole, honestly, this is sort of an ensemble film. Like, there's just so many actors that you recognize playing all these parts. Like Marlon Wayans has a small,
very
brief scene.
One scene, I think.
Yeah. And yet, you know, for that role, they felt they needed to get a name. Like, you could have just thrown someone in there, but they got Marlon Wayans instead. So, yeah, I think from top to bottom, the cast and the acting's excellent. I think for me, what is the best part, the most winning part of this, is the screenplay, because it is funny. It is a movie about shoes and corporate dealings, and it has successfully made that entertaining enough that you want to sit down and watch it.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Tucker here, a huge role. You know, not that many scenes, but a huge part of the story. His character is somebody that played an integral part in helping, you know, seal the deal here. But, like, I hadn't seen him before seeing this. I hadn't seen him since Rush Hour 3.
I feel like he's been in stuff recently other than this, but
looking at his filmography, he did Rush Hour 3 in 2007, Silver Linings Playbook, and I don't even remember what him in that movie, in 2012. Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Never seen that.
Doesn't sound good.
And then he was in a Tito Jackson music video in 2021. And then Air. So, two movies since Rush Hour 3. And, you know, no, I mean, and I assume he had a small part in Silver Linings Playbook. It's been a while since I've seen the movie, but couldn't have been a big role. So it's like, and then before that, before Rush Hour 3, he only did Rush Hour 2 in 2001. So he's only been in a handful of movies in over 20 years. So him showing up in such a big role here, it's like, wow, Chris Tucker, where you been, bro?
The bathroom.
He's very good.
He had a bowel issue.
It took a little bit, but he pinched it off, and now he's here. But it's something different for him. Something, or at least something that I hadn't seen him do. Like a serious, I mean, he's kind of comedic here, but more so.
I think the tone of the film really leans on the comedy side for a good portion of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And he is somebody that's, he brought. The comedic element, but also the kind of everyman. Like, he refers to himself, oh, they used to call me pastor. They call me pastor now. And he carries himself like a black reverend that, you know,
in my mind, from things, other things I've seen, very much represents that. And so I thought that it was a good role, it was a good choice for him in this movie. And I wish we got more Chris Tucker. Is because now I know he can like legit act. He's not just comedy relief.
The problem is whether or not you understand the words coming out of his mouth or not.
I don't, but
that's a
Jackie Chan
really does. Terrible joke. I apologize. You can edit that out. Thank you very much.
Nope.
Please take it out. It was stupid and dumb.
Welcome to the podcast. I mean, I don't know what else to say about this movie. It is a Michael Jordan puff piece. I don't know, it's not really a puff
piece, but so the story of the shoes and landing Michael Jordan is really interesting. The last 10, 15 minutes or so are so much alike. Michael Jordan is going to be amazing. And, like she talks about, a shoe is just a shoe until someone steps in it, and my baby's going to do amazing things. We all know this in hindsight, that Michael Jordan obviously is undeniably the most famous and influential basketball player of all time. We know that in hindsight. But he gets a lot of worship for playing basketball.
It's kind of interesting that they made that such a big deal, is because, he was the third pick of the draft, I think.
Yeah, because Olajuwon was one, and I can't remember who was two.
And the movie shows this, but like a majority of the people in Chicago didn't like the pick, and so I just there is a lot of
because they had the guy at the
grocery store.
I did like that, because that's a really good example. When Matt Damon leaves, he's like, everyone, knew it all along, sarcastically, because he remembers talking to that guy before and him saying, man, I wish we could have got Olajuwon. Darn it. I don't like this Michael Jordan pick, I feel bad for I don't know if he's a real player. I think he was Terrapin or whatever, the guy that pretty much got shat on through most of the movie.
Throughout the entire movie.
Not being
fuck that guy.
Good. You like him because he's the fifth pick. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm going to research if that guy's real or if they made him up just to be nice.
This movie, in a lot of it, a lot of the dialogue, a lot of the buildup to the pitch, reminded me of a heist movie, and how the ensemble gets brought in together. And talk about like Italian Job or name another heist movie, but the main guy goes. The main guy goes and recruits everybody and brings everybody together, and then they concoct the plan, and that's when they're talking to the shoe guy, and the shoe guy's he's got this big brain idea and all this, and they're he goes to Phil Knight and he's like, hey Phil, we need you to do this, you're gonna come in like 5 minutes after the meeting starts and you're gonna blah blah blah. And then the pitch is the heist. And I found myself thinking there was a lot of parallels between a heist movie and this film, even though I didn't really feel the stakes were as great. Because like you said, we only got emotional stakes from Jason Bateman's character. I didn't feel anything for Matt Damon's character, because he's just kind of, he's been floating, right? We understood that he had a rough past few years, I guess, and Phil Knight brought him in as kind of a reclamation project, and that was it. And yeah. so during this pitch, I'm thinking, okay, I was like, you know, Matt Damon's going all in, but I don't care if he seals it. I care about, like you said, Jason Bateman and these other people. I actually cared more about Ben Affleck's character and of Phil Knight, the owner of Nike, and you know what was going to happen if it didn't, if Jordan chose to go with Adidas or Converse or whatever, and how that would have affected Phil Knight, is because you could see like there was a lot of Ben Affleck did a good job playing this character because he throws a lot of emotion behind Phil Knight, and you know, kind of wavering back and forth of does he trust Matt Damon or does he not, and is just being dumb, and there was some emotional stuff behind his character, but at the end of the day, I thought I liked it because it reminded me of a heist film.
Yeah, so I pulled up the 1984 NBA draft. This is where Michael Jordan was drafted third, Olajuwon first, someone named Sam Bowie second.
That guy.
Number four was Sam Perkins, who's one of my all-time favorite Seattle Supersonics. And then Charles Barkley. I think Sam Perkins is still alive.
No, it's RIP and for your Supersonics.
Oh, yes. I thought you were trying to kill Sam Perkins. How dare you, sirs? And then, of course, Charles Barkley at five, who is a Hall of Famer. Six right. was Melvin Turpin. So this is a real guy. So not only do they feel the need to shit on him in this movie, this is from Wikipedia, so you can grain of salt it, but I think this is true. In 1984, Turpin was chosen as the sixth overall pick in the first round by the Washington Bullets in the NBA draft, being immediately traded to the Cleveland Cavaliers. That doesn't necessarily mean a sign of bad things. That's kind of right. normal in the draft. As a professional, however, he struggled with his weight. And after six seasons with the Cavaliers, the Jazz, the CAI Zaragoza, I'm going to have to find out what that is, and the Bullets, he retired. Here's the thing. Like, they didn't need to shit on this guy. Earning the derisive nicknames Dinner Del Mel and the Meal Man.
Oh, the Meal Man. That's an awesome nickname,
But they called him that because he ate so much.
And that was overweight. An awesome fucking nickname. Like, that's like Butterbean, right? The boxer.
But that guy, that was self-imposed, right?
I don't know, but... I mean, it's like the Meal Man.
I don't know.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So,
hey, we're bringing the facts here on the podcast.
Well, no, we're Googling things and looking Wikipedia up, which I think there are a lot of podcasts that just do that. Turpin, going back to Wikipedia, Turpin was considered one of the biggest busts in draft class history, or in a draft class that included future greats such as Hakeem Olajuwon, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, and John Stockton. The 2004 Sports Illustrated article, Turpin quipped, "In my day, they thought the big man was supposed to be thin. They didn't know too much. It was medieval." All that to say, they probably shouldn't have been shitting on this guy in this movie. Sadly, Melvin Turpin did pass away in 2010.
Oh, RIP that guy.
Yeah. He was 49, so pretty young.
I mean, so
again, shitting on a guy who's dead. Ooh, good job, Ben Affleck.
Listen, I've heard Ben Affleck's an asshole, but at least he makes capable movies. Anyway, so you bringing up that draft made me just Google the 2003 NBA draft, which also includes a ton of future NBA Hall of Fame talent.
Is that
talent.
The LeBron one?
That is the LeBron, Carmelo, Dwayne Wade draft. And so LeBron went number one. Carmelo went number three. Chris Bosh.
Well, number two is Darko Milicic, right?
No, that's what I was getting at. Right.
Oh, my bad. So, I jumped the gun.
Damn it. but Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade round out the fourth and fifth pick. So you've got four potential Hall of Fame players in the
Melo,
first five.
Maybe not so much, but...
No, Melo absolutely is a Hall of Famer.
Okay.
Chris Bosh, I don't think, is a Hall of Famer. But The Hall of Very Good.
Very good. But, future NBA All-Stars.
But, like, the Detroit Pistons, who picked number two in that draft and picked Darko Milicic, what the fuck?
Yeah. passed on Dwayne Wade. But you never pass know. On, you know, like, you think
wild.
You draft that guy and you hope you get Nowitzki, but you don't, you know?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I just, that's crazy. That draft was loaded. Anyways. Yeah.
I can confirm that Sam Perkins is still alive.
Oh, okay, good. No RIP for him.
Yeah. Love Sam Perkins. He was, when he played, he was known as Big Smooth. And so my first ever email account was bigsmooth14@hotmail.com. The 14 was the number that Sam Perkins wore because I loved him so much.
Your next email account should be named Mealman42.
I think Dinner Bell Mel was more my favorite. But
anyways, Joe, do you recommend Air?
I do. It's thoroughly entertaining. I don't like the Jordan worship, but again, that sort of thing turns me off anyway. But if you like Michael Jordan, you'll probably be right up your alley. It'll shoot more of his bullshit up your ass. But other than that, it is really entertaining to watch.
Yeah, it's a witty film. It's a well-crafted film. It's a brisk film. I think it's like an hour 47 or some shit. And
it was 2 hours. Hour 51. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So, it's brisk.
It feels good. It's fun, so it doesn't feel long.
Right. And it's thoroughly 80s.
Oh, yes. The soundtrack.
Everything. Everything is thoroughly 80s.
The car phone, when he's like, this car has a phone in it. Love
I mean,
that.
You've got the old computers in the background when, like, Ben Affleck's at his desk and all
yeah,
this.
Yeah, I mean, if you
pager.
Look at the picture of Ben Affleck in his tracksuit with his glasses on, I mean, yeah, it's awesomely 80s.
Yeah, and so I think it's a well-crafted film. I really do enjoy Ben Affleck, the director, and it's just another...
Yeah,
another notch in the belt.
Reminded me a lot of a Spielberg movie called The Post, where it was about them getting the green light to go live with this story. And it kind of has a similar feel to it. All the stakes in that were a lot bigger because it was like
a
national scale as opposed to this just being basketball. But I do actually appreciate the movie talking about the history of, because a lot of this I didn't know. I didn't know that they couldn't have, you know, that much red on their shoes. They couldn't have that individuality, and they couldn't, players didn't get, you know, residuals from their shoes that sales, and that Jordan broke that barrier for people. And nowadays the NBA, that's what the NBA has turned into, is shoe deals and the stardom. And it is the most, I think the players in the NBA are the most well-marketed of any sport because of that. And I think that they owed that to Jordan for sure.
Oh, yeah. 100%. NBA players have the best straight line to representing their image, on a marketing scale. And so... I enjoyed the historical aspect of this, and hopefully, I didn't go back and fact check any of this shit.
Oh, but no, I should, because of that damn Bohemian Rhapsody movie and the bullshit they came up with. But
right.
I feel comfortable with a lot of the facts parts, like the things that you kind of have to take with a grain of salt are all the private moments that are probably, not true, like the speeches and the things that were said in those conversations. But I think probably the facts about, the whole Melvin Turpin thing checked out, but the facts about, the shoes, them paying the fines, I feel like I believe that. I'll Google
sure.
it, but yeah. It feels accurate.
Yeah. It's a film that you're like, okay, yeah. I could see that happening. Or yeah, this is cool. I like this. You know, these people are funny. These people are cool. And you go with it. And that's, you know, I really enjoyed that. So I too recommend it. Jeff, did you ever see the Dunn Kings?
No.
Commercial that aired during the Super Bowl?
Definitely not.
Well, Ben Affleck directed it, and it's fucking great. It's pretty amazing. I would watch a film because Matt Damon's in it, Jennifer Lopez is in it. I would watch a movie based on the characters in that commercial.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to go down couple things. This is from Screen Rant, and it's 7 biggest changes as to what really happened from the film Air. I'm not going to go through them all because one of them is about how long they pursued Mike. But one big one is the $250,000 being the offer. Actually, the real offer was $2.5 million spread over nice. 5 years. So that's big.
In 1984, that's like
it's insane amount of money. There's questions around the input that Mom actually had in the Jordan deal, you know, because they have that scene near the end of the movie where she's on the phone saying he's going to get a cut.
Yeah.
You know, and that I think according to what I'm reading, it sounds like that was actually more Mike, but according to Affleck, he didn't want to focus on the players. He wanted to focus on everyone else around it. The trip to North Carolina probably didn't happen. The trip to North Carolina didn't happen. Who convinced him to sign with Nike? It was Sonny Vaccaro. 7 minutes. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But, so maybe I'm wrong. You know what? I take it back. You can't trust anything in a biopic.
Right.
You just can't. And it sucks because, like, so many people are like, I saw it. You know, I know that Freddie Mercury knew he had AIDS when he was at Live Aid. No, he didn't. You know, like, oh, Queen broke up. No, they never broke up. But the movie just makes shit up to make it a story. So, and this movie does not appear to be above that.
You know, the biggest farce. So the earliest biopic I can remember watching with any detail is Braveheart.
Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest center of biopics that ever existed because Mel Gibson just made shit up. When it came to William Wallace.
It's a good ass movie though.
But it's a good fucking movie. Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I
get that. But the base we of watch, the true we, story thing, you know, right, we watch, now you gotta we go watch, do your own research.
Right. But like at the time when Braveheart came out, fucking internet wasn't a thing. It was, but history nobody had access to it. Right. But you had to go fucking flip a page.
You gotta go to the library and shit. No one knows where the library is,
right? So it's just like, you know, when biopics were made back in the day, we just assumed that they were being told with truth, and not for entertainment value. And now,
apparently I do because I just sat here being like, hey, I think that this. I believe it. And then I go and look it up and half the shit I was believing didn't happen.
Yeah. It's just, when a biopic comes out and I watch it, I'm just like, I don't give a fuck. Yeah. Did that entertain me? Yes.
I do feel the need to go research after. And I wish I had done that with this one, but to its credit, I found the movie so thoroughly entertaining. I didn't need to.
Well, right. There's no really outlandish things here in this film where you're like, oh, that didn't happen. It's entertaining throughout. And so you're just like, eh, after it's done, you're like, oh, I was entertained.
Yeah.
But anyways, what are we watching next
week? You ready to be entertained? So yeah. When I pick basketball movies, my basketball movies star basketball players. So I had Ray Allen's amazing Oscar-worthy performance, and he got Game. Yeah. I'm clearly being sarcastic. So now we go to the big man, the Shaqtus. I can't remember. Shaq Diesel. Help me out with some more Shaq nicknames. Diesel, yeah. What was he?
The big Aristotle.
Yes, very good. I appreciate that you remembered one. The man who saved Papa John's pizza, my favorite pizza. You got to get yourself a Shaqaroni. We are not sponsored, but Shaquille O'Neal, Nick Nolte, Ed O'Neal, you know, Mr. Bundy is in this as well, as well as several coaches, Rick Pitino, Bobby Knight make an appearance, Penny Hardaway. If you were a fan of Shaq in his Orlando days, you probably know who Penny Hardaway is. We're going to watch Blue Chips. It was from 1994, and it was directed by William Friedkin, who also directed Killer Joe, but most notably directed the original Exorcist as well.
Bro, this is on Paramount Plus. Let's go.
Yeah, buddy.
So, I don't got a illegitimate means.
Yeah,
you don't have to. This shit.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to this because actually it's probably not going to be any good, but you know, I'm still looking forward to it.
I've never seen it, so I'm down for whatever once.
But if anybody is going to not be able to act as Shaq, and I love, let me say this, as much as I can't stand Michael Jordan, I fucking love Shaquille O'Neal. He's like the complete opposite of Michael Jordan to me. Anyway,
he was a big star in the 90s.
How do you feel about Shaq? You like Shaq, right?
Yeah, I like Shaq. One of the greatest podcast. Lakers of all time. But, no, I mean, he was everywhere in the 90s. You know, film, basketball, TV.
Shaq,
I mean,
coming soon. We're going to watch Kazam. Fucking Steel.
Steel.
I think that was it. And Blue Chip.
Yeah, it might have been.
It's a 3-week month.
But anyways, plug the music before we get out of here. And once again, we want to thank the band No Shows from New York with their song Getaway for allowing us to use their music here on our podcast. And if you want to support the podcast, you can follow us on all your favorite social media platforms at Movie Draft House or on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, right here on YouTube where you're watching us. Give us a like, follow, and hit the subscribe button when it pops up so you don't miss any future content here on our podcast. If you want to follow Jeff on Twitter and you tell him, hey, Jeff, how did Michael Jordan hurt you, really?
He did. He beat my team in the finals. You don't have to. Anyway.
You can hit him up at Podcast by Jeff.
And if you want to get in touch with Mark and try to figure out if he's a fair weather Lakers fan or not, you can do so on Twitter at I Heard You Liked.
I'm not, and I can prove it because I bought a what's his name? Fuck. It's in my closet.
Tony Kukoc? Did he ever play there? No, that was the Bulls.
No.
I can't wait. A Vlade Divac jersey? You got a Vlade Divac jersey?
No, it was it was 2011 and it was the Lakers had just come off of like signing Dwight Howard and Steve Nash. And
but your hopes were high.
Then they both got injured because they were old and broken. And then Kobe that season tore his Achilles, and so the Lakers were left with a bunch of scrubs. And my mom, of all people, decided for my birthday she was going to buy me a Lakers jersey.
Oh,
and she bought me Nick. What the fuck is his last name? He, worst Lakers ever. That's what I'm Googling.
was it Nick Anderson? Nick Anderson was a Laker at some point, wasn't he?
Top 10 all-time worst Lakers. It's got
to
be
Curry?
Him. No, it's Oh, Smush Parker. No, it wasn't him. Anyways, this motherfucker.
I need to know who it is.
I'm trying to get his last name.
Laker. Nick.
Laker Nick.
Laker Nick. Nick Young?
Yes, Nick Young.
Okay. Trust me, I know how to Google, buddy.
she gets me this jersey, and it's Nick Young, and I'm like, the fuck? And I'm like, I'm like, why did you give me this? Where did you get this Nick Young jersey to begin with?
Where do you find a Nick Young jersey?
Right. And so it come to find out, she special fucking ordered it. Paid like $200.
Oh, was it one of the ones that like the actual stitched on?
Yes.
Like the nice
yes.
ones?
And that's why I haven't gotten rid of it, because it's an actual jersey. And if I ever get the chance, I'll have Nick Young.
One day I'll come over and I'll wear my Ray Allen Sonics jersey, the nice stitched one. And you can wear your Young jersey.
We can debate
who's the better player.
I have a Steve Nash original too, but
I have my only stitched jersey is my Ray Allen one, but I have the like iron on ones for Detlef Schrempf and Gary Payton. I was a big Detlef Schrempf guy. I wish I had a Sam Perkins one. I love Sam Perkins. Anyways.
Don't forget to follow us on all the social media, get all your stuff, do the like, follow, subscribe thing, and join us next week as we watch Blue Chips.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Question mark.
Mark's excited. Let them go free, but reality is something I dream. Forget